Everybody ready? Come on, let's go.
The Rick Flair Show! Let's go! The Rick Flair Show! Let's go!
Yo, what's up? Welcome to the Rick Thorne Show. Obviously, I'm Rick Thorne on the phone right now. I got Mr. Nate Adams. What up, dude? What are you doing?
What's up, Rick? Oh, man, I am just loaded up the kids in the car. They're out to the park with Mom. I'm sitting down at my desk here. Got a bunch of desk family. My glove business keeps me very busy every day. So I'm just working away, man, waiting for some of this rain to dry up so I can go ride and working away in the meantime.
So you're a busy dude, man. What's up? What have you been up to? It's been a while since I talked to you.
Yeah, it's been a little while, man. We've both been busy, and it's just our lifestyle. We're busy lifestyle. We've got to constantly be out there riding, creating content, which is always fun. But, you know, sponsors need videos, they need photos, our own. You know, we got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. It's all happening. So just busy, man, working on my glove business, deaf family, being a dad, the twin boys, and a husband, and just riding dirt bikes, man. Usable stuff.
That's rad. I didn't know that you were originally from Phoenix.
Yes, sir.
You got a lot of stuff to ride out there, a lot of terrain, right?
Totally, yeah. Endless amounts of open riding and just open area. I mean, not a ton of like terrain that's good for free riding. Like out here in Southern California, there's a lot of, you know, rolling grass hills with sharp edges and stuff. That, you know, in Beaumont, Ritchie Canyon, all these places that create such. You know, when you look at all these videos that have come up for the last, say, 20 or 30 years in moto, it's surprising how much of that stuff was built in such a small area. It's really not that big of an area, but, man, this great areas out here where I'm living in California presently is for free riding. But Arizona, you know, there's good little pockets of that stuff out in the desert. But, I mean, just endless terrain to go trail riding, make your own, you know, motocross track, rut tracks, and just, yeah, I mean, what else was there to do besides, like, skateboard by in the new, you know, business complexes and ride your dirt bike and all the in the desert surrounding our house. So it was a great place to grow up, man.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And I could see the difference in that terrain because, yeah, obviously it's more kind of like deserty and rocky out in Phoenix compared to, you know, the hills out here.
Totally, yeah. Lots of rock, lots of cactus. And, yeah, but there'll be patches out there of just like someone went out there and filtered the dirt out of the rocks out of the dirt and threw some sand in it. And it's like they'll find these little pockets of just perfect little areas for making jumps or making a rut track. But a lot of guys like Destry Abbott, you know, and Max Anderson, a lot of enduro guys and desert riding guys live in Arizona because it's just as far as the eye can see. And once you rode to there, as far as the eye can see, you just keep on riding. And that's, you know, great terrain for training for that type of racing. A lot of desert, enduro, and cross-country guys live out there.
So did you start off like a lot of motocross, freestyle motocross guys did, and a lot of us BMXers as well, with racing? Did you dream, I'm going to be a racer before freestyle moto, or were you at the age where freestyle moto was out and you're like, I'm going to do freestyle moto and skip the whole racing thing?
Totally. Well, I mean, I had dreams and aspirations of being Ricky Johnson, and then it was, you know, Jeff Stanton, and it was Jeremy McGrath, and you know, for a few years, even after I had began doing freestyle, maybe around 12 or 13, and then I started doing contests at 15. And even then, you know, I could only afford one bike, and then I could afford two bikes, but I needed one bike at home to practice freestyle, and then one to send out on the road to always be shipped to, you know, different shows. And then I think about 18, I finally had enough money. I bought a motorbike, a 125, and so I hadn't raced in years, and started dabbling in racing again here and there. But long story short, racing was my first love, and you know, as your parents do when you start getting older, you know, you gotta, you know, work and pay for more. And when you can go race and spend, you know, easily a couple hundred bucks just on getting the bike ready and tires and gate fee and sign up fee, and you know, I could go ride all weekend in the desert for a fraction of that price. And, you know, build jumps, and just, it was just more, I was having more fun riding freestyle than chasing the dream of racing, which, you know, my dad's always supported me and my biggest supporter. And I think my dad found, now that I'm a dad, I think my dad found a happy medium. But when I was younger and I had buddies that had, you know, four bikes, you know, a practice bike and three race bikes, and they were traveling around the country going to amateur nationals. I'm like, come on, Dad, let's go do that. And remember my dad was like, no, you can, if you turn 18, you can go chase the dream all over the country in your van and your truck all you want. But my dad instilled that, you know, I had to pay for things on my own, and you know, kind of upset me when I was a young teenager. But now at 35, it really ingrained some hard work and good lessons and morals in me. So anyway, when you can, you know, ride all weekend for $40 as opposed to a couple hundred, it was a pretty easy decision for me. I mean, I just wanted to be on my bike more than racing or more freestyle. I just wanted to be on my dirt bike having fun with my friends. So that kind of was the natural gravitation toward freestyle. And then once I started doing contests, I was making like $500 to $1,000 a weekend, and shoot, I had a truck, I had three dirt bikes. I, you know, like I was living the dream at 16. So it was pretty easy for me to see that, hey, freestyle can be a job and a career for me, and I can race for fun whenever I want. So
right,
that's kind of how that all happened.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. You know, racing, it seems like not many people make that much money at it. You know what I mean? It seems like it's a lot more money spent than what you're getting in return, even though it's your love.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like you're grinding it, right?
It is a passion sport. Oh, my gosh. Like, when I see these families, amateur kids, and granted, they might be the next hot thing, or they might have an injury tomorrow that ends their career, or the kid might get burnt out or get interested in girls or partying, but these families that, you know, sold their house, bought a motorhome, live out of the motorhome, travel in the country, and just ultimate dedication. And that's the level of racing. And freestyle is doing the same thing, but man, with racing, you can spend a fortune and just get by, you know, just make enough to get to the next race. It can be kind of a cycle that some guys get into, and it's like you either got to just admit that you're a great rider, but you're not going to be the guy who's going to win a championship or get that six-figure contract, and it's just, oh, man, so expensive, and only the top few, the very little percentage, get those, that ride, that paycheck, whatever, you know, if the end goal is, you know. So,
well, even if you win.
It's definitely a tough sport.
Yeah, and even if you win like a supercross event, it's really not that much money, is it?
No. Okay.
It's like so 50. Yeah, it's like
a hypothetical situation is like, let's say you're a privateer, which is like a non-factory rider. You're not riding for a bike manufacturer. You're most likely not a very famous rider, even though you might be an amazing rider. But let's say there's some upset. If you win a 450 main event, some privateer, relatively unknown rider, wins the main event. Well, the payout from the AMA, the American Motorcycle Association, is going to be about, last time I checked, maybe about $3,500, $4,000. And where the top guys make their money is, you know, if you're riding for, Monster Energy or, you know, bike manufacturer, when you win a heat race, there's bonuses, a qualifying race, there's bonuses. There's bonuses for a main event win or a championship win. And that's where the big money gets made, is in this contract bonus agreement between the rider and the sponsor. But so if you're just some privateer who doesn't have those big sponsorships, you go out and just have this breakthrough ride and beat the best riders in the world and win the main event, you're still walking out of there with only a few grand. Like, it's not set at all. It's a cutthroat sport, and it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. Absolutely. You know, and then compared to, you know, the amount of time and energy you put into it, and you're chasing your dream and you're doing your thing. And I could see why a lot of guys, went from racing to freestyle moto. In my case, you know, I was riding BMX, and then I was like, I just didn't like the whole concept of, I don't know. I always just craved more of an expression. And I think that's what led me more to freestyle. 'Cause we used to do like, you know, tricks in the parking lot and then go race, you know what I mean? And so it was just a different. So I just see a lot of similarities between freestyle motocross riders and BMXers from that time. Like, I think a lot of kids now probably get into it and they go, I don't want to race, I want to freestyle, and they just start freestyling. But in the early days, it was a lot different. Do you think that the kids getting into freestyle moto now, or moto now, say, I'm going to be a freestyle motocross racer and just totally skip the racing aspect?
Totally. And it's crazy. Yeah, we come from a different era, but yeah, there was no way to, I mean, freestyle wasn't even, you know, really, people didn't know about it. And now when I talk, if you just mention like motocross to somebody, their odds are good. They're going to be like, oh, the backflip, the X Games stuff, the X Fighter stuff, you know, they might bring up, when you mention just the word dirt bike and motocross, then they might associate that with freestyle or racing, but it's about 50-50. Whereas, you know, back in the era we're talking about, like you said, you do tricks in the parking lot and then went race. Yeah, we did, you know, we did our motos on practice days, and when you're done, you know, prepping for the race, you know, you went out onto the biggest jump of the track and did whips and heel flickers and 2 foot of cans and, you know, play road for a little bit. And now it's just a totally different thing. Like you're saying, freestyle in both BMX and motocross is legitimized, and people know about it worldwide, and kids are saying, I want to do freestyle. They don't even want to race. They don't even want to go pedal around a track or rip a motocross track. They want to get straight into the freestyle side of it, and that's cool to see. But I think, you know, there's, maybe you can attest in BMX, there's some things I think racing, and not even racing, but riding track, just having the skill to go ride a track, hold a good pace, ride ruts, jumps, judge distances, do all these things that absolutely benefit you in freestyle and translate over. And there's things in freestyle that you acquire, you know, skills that when you go back to it, say you ride freestyle for a month, when you go back to the motocross track, you'll be seeing things differently. You'll be seeing lines that you didn't see before, and your mind will just be in touch with things that it wasn't if you hadn't ever ridden freestyle. So benefits to both sides. And like I said, I do both because I just love riding. There was a decade of my life where I didn't want to do anything but ride freestyle and win comps and yada, yada, yada. But nowadays, I just want to have fun with it, you know?
Yeah, I respect that. I think being diversified is, like, key to, you know, anything that you do. You say, okay, I ride BMX, I ride street, but you don't, you know, I'm not, transition sucks. And you're like, no, it doesn't. You just haven't learned it. Once you learn it, you'll love it. Once you learn how to ride it. And so being like diversified and your riding only helps. And if you love riding, then there's just new challenges too, because you're like, do you feel that way? Like,
right. No, that's totally healthy. And you just, it's a great thing, and it opens up your eyes and your mind, and it allows you to have more fun just being more diversified.
Let's talk about your company. You have a glove company, Deft, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Deft Stanley. Thank you for mentioning that, Rick. Yeah, 2008, I started it in 2009, but 2008, I kind of just noticed that, man, none of these gear companies, I had ridden for a few gear companies at that point, and just noticed that none of the gear companies are really putting that much time into the glove. And because I was a freestyler, and like I, you know, mentioned, I was kind of constantly fighting myself from being too overly picky, like bar positioning, lever positioning, keg positioning, the type of boots I wore, how broken in they had to be before I ride freestyle in them, and my gloves, how they had to be, you know, unstitching, you know, patches and layers for the pump, taking off all this rubber that was on top of the knuckles with all these motor gloves. And I just decided, I'm going to make my own gloves. And at that time, I was sponsored by Target, the stores, the chain of stores. And my deal with them was I was riding for a different gear company, but they were making my gloves. And they had logos on the gloves and on my helmet. That was my sponsorship deal with them, with Target. And so I approached them and said, hey, I want to make a motocross glove company. It'll be one less thing for you guys to do. Make me, you know, 50 pairs of motocross gloves a year. And they basically said, yeah, okay. And with the gear company I was riding for at the time, I had a glove-less contract. My gloves were completely open. I can do whatever I want. And anyway, that was it. Target gave me their contact at the factory, and I just started refining what I wanted in a glove. And started, even then, took, you know, maybe 6 months to get what I wanted, and that was it. In 2009, we released gloves, and we've just been refining the chassis of the glove every year. We've got three different models, and just been building on that. I just felt like, man, I can make a glove that like a rider's rider wants. I feel like all the gloves that were on the market at that time were being made by someone who maybe rides leisurely or for just pure enjoyment, and is maybe guessing at what a rider's rider wants, or someone whose passion is riding. And I felt like I knew what that was, and it would be, you know, just kind of a turnkey deal. I could make gloves, and riders would like them. It'd spread by word of mouth, and now social media and online, and Google AdWords and all that. But yeah, it was just something I was passionate about and felt that I could do, and can't believe it's going to be 10 years this year.
It's been 10 years?
It's going to be 09 to 2019, dude. I cannot believe it. I was 25 when I started it, and I'll be 35 in March. Nuts.
Wait, so
just flying.
No, it is flying. And wait, so we did that. I did that show with you at that Target deal years ago, remember? And
yeah.
That was like probably right when you started the gloves then, right? About then?
Probably right around then, yeah.
You said 2009 or 2008.
2008, I started chipping away at getting things lined up, and we released our first gloves in 09.
Yeah, because I interviewed you, I think, back 10 years ago, dude. Remember? It was at that Target deal, and, like, Christina Aguilera played there, and, like...
Like, it was, like, at the convention in Minneapolis, right? Not a convention, but, like, in a convention center in Minneapolis, right?
Yeah, it was, like, Matt Hoffman and me, Kevin Robinson,
yeah.
Sean White was skating the vert ramp, actually. It was sick. That was pretty, that was cool. And then you look out, there's like 8,000 red shirts from all the Target sales, like other employees.
All the people had the Target red shirts on. Yeah, that was good times, man. That was good stuff.
That was, well, cool. Yeah, so the gloves, you sponsor a whole team and stuff as well?
Yeah, we've got a few BMXers, James Palmer, a BMX racer, and we got legend Ryan Nyquist on board, and the Supercross racer, Cheyenne Harmon, Justin Starling, we got myself, Bo Bamberg, and Travis Pastrano wears Def Gloves and has for a long time. And always appreciate Travis supporting me, even when we were competing against each other in freestyle. Steve Sally, he was wearing them. So, and that just kind of affirmed to me that, like, I'm making a good glove, riders like the glove. And Jeremy McGrath rode for us for years, Todd Potter, Jeremy Stenberg. So I kind of had, I'm a small business. And some gear companies are cool with their guys wearing my gloves. Some aren't. Some are for a few years and aren't for a few years, and I get a guy back. But, you know, every now and then one of my buddies, like Twitch or Jeremy McGrath, will be like, hey, my sponsor kind of wants me to wear their gloves now. And a few years will go by, I'll have them back on the team or whatever. So I just don't have the big funds to say, no, you're staying on that family, and, you know, here's X amount of dollars for that. So I just kind of... keep it rolling, man, and try not to, you know, business, not take offense to it, and hey, just kind of keep it all in mind, like, hey, I'll have them back in a year or two, or maybe not, but it's all good. But
yeah,
I have always had a good lineup of riders, and that really helps the business, as far as, you know, people just seeing that and taking note that Death Family Gloves are on or have been on these guys for a long time. So it's it always helps. I can't thank my buddies enough for how much, really, you know, free publicity I've gotten from my friends who just want to wear the gloves. So I even Cooper Webb, who won the 450 main event last week, and a couple of years ago when he was on 250s, I actually taught an image of him in a magazine, and the angle it was at, I'm like, he was practicing at the time, and I can't remember which gear company, but he's a factory rider, I think it was for Yamaha at the time, but in never made gear, so we were not the team sponsor for gloves or gear, but he had on, I mean, he was playing Death Family Gloves and wearing them. So that little things like that just mean the world to me and affirm that, you know, I have a great glove. I might be a little biased, but I think I have the best glove in the on the motocross market.
Yeah, there you go. But, that's what's
so
up.
Just, you know, those little things pop up. And go, oh my gosh, Cooper Webb bought the glove and was wearing them when he practiced.
Yeah, dude.
Not a race day, but, you know, little things like that. It's just kind of confidence boosters, and they mean a lot, you know.
Of course. And, you know, action sports, can we say action sports? Does that sound weird coming from OGs like us? You know, the stuff that we do. there's a lot of camaraderie, you know, and there's a lot of support amongst each other. It's not so much like, you know, I don't know. I think people understand that nowadays. I think it's always been that way. People support each other, and you got a product. You say, hey, homie, can you help me out? And then I got your back as this grows. And, I mean, how many companies have we seen blow up that way? I mean, so many clothing, sunglasses, watches.
Yeah.
You know, it's always been like, oh, yo. And then as they get bigger now, obviously you have to stay loyal to the companies that you ride for. Of course, that's the whole reason why they endorse you. But it's kind of cool to, you know, the list of the names of people you said that support you, because it is like a little, it's like a little family within itself at the same time.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
don't you think that way about like you go out to compete and you're like, okay, I'm competing, but it's, for me, I always felt like I was competing against myself more than I was like, obviously you want to win and place good and you want to, you know, get sponsors and you know, keep the career, you're able to do what you love to do. But ultimately deep inside for me, I was always competing against myself. Like I'm going to pull this trick. It's like that motocross too, to a degree, right? Like people aren't like cutthroat with each other as much, are they?
I mean, there is a little bit. I'd say it's getting more so that maybe nowadays. You know, I'm not top level competition anymore. You know, I'm at the tail end of my career as far as competing and all that. But I kind of saw it the last few years. I was still competing heavily. That, you know, guys are a little more, I guess, secretive with what they're doing, what they're going to do in practice or in the competition, or what tricks they're working on at home. But there was never really like cutthroatness or animosity or hatred toward each other. But,
right.
Man, you know, like the days we were talking about like 10 years ago, you know, those like glory years for FMX when I think the sport was at its peak, meaning the notoriety was getting worldwide, but the size of the courses and the stadiums we were filling there was so much camaraderie back then. Everyone was working toward the same goal. And like you said, we're all competing against each other. So there was still a limit, but man, it was like a big brotherhood. And everyone knew that we had this golden opportunity. This sport's growing. We're all making livings. I mean, you know, guys that were basically at the point in their lives where they're accepting, like, I'm not going to make it racing. I'm going to not make a living on my bike. So I'll ride for fun, but I'll have to do this on the side. And then freestyle comes about and we all get this chance, right?
Right.
And there was just so much camaraderie and this brotherhood and so much this brotherly love for each other and care. And when someone went down or got hurt, everyone was right there for them. And you know, not just on the dirt there, but people were staying there, stayed overseas with people who crashed and got hurt and made sure they got home safe and you know, help each other out, get back on the bike. And
right.
It was just a good time, a season of my life. You know, there was just, you just felt like you had a thousand dudes to call on and, you know, 100 best friends, and it was good times.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was a great time.
Yeah, well, yeah, without a doubt. You know, I think that. And the reason why I brought that up is just because you were talking about your gloves and you were saying like, oh, I have Travis wearing these and different people. But you've done a lot of touring with Travis as well, right? Didn't you do Nitro Circus stuff?
Totally. And you know what? I kind of forgot about that point. Yeah, I mean, even like Deerdick and Ken Block and guys starting, you know, DC Shoes, and so many companies, big companies, have come from, you know, rider started and rider owned brands. It's cool to see. Everyone will, like you said, to an extent, you got to support the brands to support you, but until a certain level is reached by the brand, you know, everyone's repping it, supporting it, and just kind of getting it out there. Yeah, it's cool to see. But yeah, man, doing the Nitro stuff with Travis, it's, again, so much camaraderie on that tour and brotherhood, and you kind of got to, you know, you're living with people, whether in a bus or on a plane or in hotels, and you're a traveling, you know, circus, so to speak. But there's just, you got to rely on the guy next to you going off a ramp literally at the same time, and then, you know, a foot separates, you know, the ends of your handlebars. There's so much trust is built and made, and it's hard to explain, but man, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that tour had to be rad. It seemed like, and still is. I mean, the crowd response seems like people are pretty in it. You're packing stadium or arenas, right? Is that it's arenas, and it's. I've never been to one.
Oh,
no? No. Like, I suck, dude. We're not even friends anymore. I know. It's cool. You know? And it's not because I hosted the Boom Boom Hug Jam, and it's not like it's this competing thing or nothing, bro. I just never been, bro. Like when you
everyone's
got...
Everyone's busy, dude. But, they do it in arena. It kind of just matters. I mean, a lot of times it's safe. We'll do it in arenas, but sometimes we'll... Actually, even in the States, we'll be in, like, college football stadiums. And, you know, they'll have one side of the stadium only open for seating, and the course is, you know, on that side of the field, but, you know, still packing, you know, 20,000 or 30,000 people in there. And the arenas, in my opinion, are the best. Even though the riding's a little tighter, I mean, no one has a bad seat. You know, you're right there, and you just...
That's sick. You know, I feel like our friendship...
There's no bad seats for the crowd, and we can just, you know, you can reach up and high-five the crowd as you ride past, go get the jump again. You know, you can just hear them, see them, feel them. Feel the energy coming off them. It's cool.
That is cool. You know, I felt like this whole interview and our friendship just went whoop when I said I'd never been. You were like, really, dude? Really? And you have the nerve to call me, brah. Hey, I wanted to mention from earlier, you know who my idol was back in the day? I'd go to Supercross. See, I wanted to ride motocross before BMX. And yeah, I had like a little mini bike, but it was like with the Briggs & Stratton motor, you know, where you pull it, rah, you know, like a little lawnmower bike. And and then my mom saved up money and she got me this. It was called a KDX80. I guess that would be like, you know, a weaker version of the KX80, right? But you know who I wanted to be like, bro? Jeff Ward. Is that the dude?
Jeff Ward. Yeah,
bro. It shows my age. And like, we'd go to the Supercross, and I just thought of this because we were talking about the Nitro Circus, and I remember just being inspired, like, that's what I want to do, man. That's what I want to do, right? And do you think by what you're doing, Nacho Circus, there's got to be those kids in that crowd that are going, that's what I want to do, man. You know, like, I want to be part of that. How does
totally.
That?
Totally. I mean, yeah. I remember those from seeing the, just Steel Roof and Terra Firma videos and just being completely captivated by it. And you're just like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I want to do that. I had no idea up until this moment in my life that this even existed, and now that's all I want to do. And absolutely, I mean, every Nitro show, every X Fighters, every X Games, there's parents or kids that come up to us, and parents saying, like, this is my kid, all he wants to do. You know, some parents are riders themselves, and other parents couldn't tell you how to start a dirt bike, but their kid loved it, or loved BMX, and it's just, it's the being able to see it and then go to these events and see it live. And dude, you know, when you see something on TV and then you go see it live, it's twice. And
I'm that way with music too.
It's captivating to people. Yeah, it's just that people are want to be a part of the sport, and it's cool to see. It's, you know, those are the kids that are going to come up, and they're 10 now, and in 10 years will be a man and will be doing stuff that we never dreamed of, but we thought just video game tricks or video game capabilities on a dirt bike, and they'll make it look easy. It reminds me of when I was 20 and guys are saying, like, I just can't, older riders and saying, I just can't believe everything that you guys are doing. And when you're young, you're just focused on the mix. You're like, oh, thanks, you know, and you keep moving. But now looking back, like, there's going to be kids that are going to, you know, probably triple backflips will be standard in freestyle runs in the not too distant future. So,
well, my theory on that is some kids. My theory on that is they could see it.
Oh, like the mind's eye. Like, I think if you can envision it, like, it takes someone special to envision it and go for the first time. But, like, once Terry Hart touched the first flip and landed on his wheels, yeah, he slid off the back. I consider Terry Hart did the first time.
Right.
You can argue on that. But like, it just opened up the floodgates, right? Then Nestor did it, then Deegan did it, then Strana, and then me. And then, you know, if you can see it, yeah, you can just... You can start to visualize it for yourself and the body positioning and where you'll put. I remember, you know, before Carrie Hart or anyone did a flip on a dirt bike, you know, the talk was like, I don't even think a backflip is possible on a dirt bike. I think the inertia of the motor and the spinning wheels will stop you upside down and this and that. There's so much BS talk going around. And then once someone does it, that gets thrown out the window, and it's just like, dinner bell ring. Everyone's running for it. You know, he's doing it, and it's possible. Now everyone's doing it. When
right,
you know, I don't know if that's possible. But when people can see it, it's almost like you can learn something by seeing it done. You know.
Yeah, you can. And kids have a lot of accessibility to that nowadays, or they're accessible to it. I got a little secret for you that not a lot of people know, and it was a different size bike, but. And I give Kerry all the props in the world. I have no, like, dude, I'm stoked he did that. Like, it was on did he do it on 250, right?
252 shows, yeah.
Badass.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this. Is this a guy on the CR80 who would, like, backflip BMX box jumps and stuff?
Dude, check it out. That was my old homie, Bob Cole, right?
No way.
No, check this out.
As you said that, I just remembered that. Yeah.
Yeah, so check this out. So he was like a top, like, vert competitor. Like, he was like, he was so innovative. He had his own style. He had his own tricks. And, like, there was only a handful of dudes. Like, there still kind of is nowadays anyways. But really a handful of dudes killing it, right, on vert, okay? Mm-hmm. And then he got kind of disappeared, man. No one really knew what happened to him, you know. It was just, like, just disappeared. And then out of nowhere, this is about, like, 1992 or no, about 93 maybe, he hit me up and he says, hey, man, I got these shows I'm doing. I want you to do some shows up in Duluth with me. So, like, I go, all right, yeah, man, let's do this. Bob, where you been? What you been up to? He's like, I've been flipping dirt bikes. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. And he had, like, a VHS tape. Because I met him in Chicago on the way up to go up there because I drove from Missouri. Anyways, long story short, he freaking would go to, like, these, we did a bunch of stuff at some, like, car shows, bro. And he had this, like, box jump that was huge, and he was flipping dirt bikes, bro. Like, at the end of the show, I'd flip the spine, and he'd flip the box on his bike. Like,
I remember seeing
real shit,
dude.
Video.
In, like, the 90s, a dirt bike video called AXO. AXO was a gear company back then. And it was called AXO Action Figures. I think was it. And it was, I think, was the name of the video. And that guy, I'm sorry, I forgot his name already, but he was in, like, they gave me either, like, a section of the video. I was a kid when I saw this video last night. So it was either credit of the video or he had his own little section of the video. But I could not believe it. Yeah, he was just sticking backflips on a CR80 off his BMX.
Yeah,
box.
Yeah. It's crazy, dude. Yeah, it's so crazy.
He did the first backflip, first big bike backflip of Perry, but your homie was the first to break the mold. And to do something first is a different, it's a different thing. For Perry to do what he did, I mean, for me to know it's possible and then go do it was still gnarly. No phone could do anything when I learned backflips. Just to be like, this is my goal, and I'm going to backflip a dirt bike, do something the first time ever. And it's different. I don't care what anyone says. It's different to the very first guy.
Yeah, I mean, they're two different times, two different trains, two different sized bikes. But, you know, for bike riders, we were just like, oh, shit, Bob Cole. You know what I mean? Because we were just, you know, it was. But I give Kerry all the props in the world. I ain't taking nothing away from Kerry, nor Bob or anybody. But it's just when we talk about backflips, and the reason why we got on this is because people could see things and they could see that it's possible, right? Well, the select individuals that make up tricks that see things before anyone else, you know. And bring it to life. And so, you know, that's something that Kerry did. I'm sure Kerry didn't know who Bob Cole was, and Bob was, you know, not doing his thing. But, you know, like I said, they're two different things. But I always just think of that when we talk about backflips on motorcycles, because the first one that I ever seen was Bob Cole. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, all right, Bob, I'm going to roll in off the quarter. I'm going to flip the spine. You're going to come this way, and you're going to flip the box. And that was the end of our show. That was the last trick we did for our show. And it was at a car show with, like, people eating corn dogs and, like, an audience of, like, 50 people. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like the platform of the, you know. And so, yeah, man. So anyways, but you've done a lot of cool stuff. You've done a lot of cool tours, and I'm sure you're still inspiring people. I wanted to talk to you about this electric bike thing, dude.
That was a lot of fun, man.
Yeah. Are you still on an electric bike right now?
No, I can kind of tell. You might not know the news, but mid-October, they went out of business, man. So,
what, last year?
Yeah, 2018. Yep. It's a done deal. But I was on that bike for a year, electric. It was awesome. A lot of fun. And, I don't know all the details. It happened, like, one day, they were just, it was done. They had to shut their doors, and it came to pick up my bike, and they were trying to pay back the bank, and so I'm moving on. Hopefully they'll reopen their doors one day, because they literally, I mean, it's a legitimate dirt bike. It's so much fun to ride them for a year, and I hope that Alton Motors can open their doors, and they had a great thing going.
Well, that's how it is when you have investors. If they don't see the numbers, they'll say later. They don't, I mean, they got to cover their own, you know, they're like, all right, well, this ain't working, you know, unfortunately.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've been watching this guy, Josh. Is it Josh Hill?
Josh Hill. Yeah, he's still ripping his.
You know, I've been watching. I just started following him because I saw this thing in my feed. He did this like front flip off his bike down this like off this dock into this landing, and then I just kept watching his stuff. And he's like out street riding, dude. And he's like out like riding, hitting the parks and stuff. Do you think that's something people are going to start doing more of? Because I'm like, dude, this dude's doing some pretty cool stuff that's different. You know what I mean? I hadn't seen.
Yeah, I think
maybe people are doing it. I don't know, but that's the first dude I see. He's out riding street on his dirt bike. Sick.
I've seen Jimmy Hill, who's another pro rider, pro freestyle rider, doing similar stuff. I've seen him at like Burnside and doing cool stuff on the electric bike. So man, the rear tire is gonna grip and rip just like a dirt bike, but there's no noise.
Wait, let me cut you off. He's out riding an electric bike doing that?
Yeah, that's what Josh Hill's doing. Jimmy Hill, I mean, they're riding Burnside, all these skate parks, and you know, hitting these gaps, like making like urban free riding. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for the sport, but I know people are going to get into it.
I think it's cool because it's just like, I mean, it's just something different. I mean, I relate to it, obviously, because, you know, being a BMXer, and I'm like, whoa, that's sick. That guy, what? Like, I'm like, what? So he's on an electric bike too, or he is on an electric bike.
Not full time, but he has one. And I don't know, I've had some minimal amount of contact with people from Alta because it was literally like one day just all the work phones, emails, it's done. I was sponsored one day and then I have no way to communicate with anyone the next.
Got it.
But Josh has his bike, still does, and he's doing really cool stuff. And I didn't mean my previous statement to make it sound like I don't think it's cool. I think it's awesome.
No. I see what you're saying.
It's great, but I think, you know, some skate parks you might go to and the locals ain't feeling it.
Right.
You know, it just, I understand that, but I mean, I think there was some video he posted maybe a month ago. He's a fucking like 100 plus for sure foot, 100 foot plus tabletop, like in between the alley tracks and just finding all these cool things. I was more just riding freestyle, riding shows and doing my whole deal normally, but just on an electric bike. And that's how I wanted to prove to the people that my sponsor, Alta Motors, makes a bike that's capable of any gas-powered bike. But, you know, Josh has got this whole, you know, free urban free ride thing going. He's killing it, dude. And with that motor, it's a RC car. It's all the sound it makes. You can literally be riding through the neighborhood and someone could be inside reading a book and they won't hear you ride by.
Well, wow,
if they do,
that
it'll sound like an electric bicycle or something. You can be tucking 200-foot jumps on this bike.
Wow, that explains it.
Mouth, dude. It's cool. Yeah, it's cool.
It is cool. But yeah, skate parks, some of them might not like it, but I bet you if you or Josh or whoever rolled up to a skate park, if that was your thing, you know, and you're like, I'm going to bust a scat, people would stop to watch that shit because it is cool. You'd be like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, well, the video that Josh has shown, that's pretty much what happens. People, stop skating and riding the bike and, like, watch Josh fuck this gap and then pin it out of there. And there have been some videos he posted where cops showed up and this and that. So you're going to have that backlash. But, man, just it's funny how much noise that I realized from having my electric bike and seeing what Josh and Jimmy Hill are doing. The noise is the nuisance.
There's no noise.
Right, but the sound and the noise of a gas powered bike is a majority of the nuisance. I mean, you ride this electric bike around, and like I was saying, you know, locals might be pissed about it, or might, you know, cops might show up, it would not last a fraction of the time if you're on a 450 just blowing out everyone's eardrums in the neighborhood. I mean, it made me realize how much of a nuisance. Or what the average person is bothered by the noise, not just the fact that there's a dirt bike doing something, but it's the noise.
Right.
And so now, I mean, Josh has just proven that these things are capable of riding skate parks and all this, you know, urban free riding. And it's pretty dang cool, man. I think people probably see, as long as there's electric bikes out there that people can ride, there'll be people doing this. There'll kind of be a spike in urban free riding.
That's rad. I bet you people double take. I probably would. I'd be like, huh? Wait, what? The bike is he coasting on that bike? He's not making any noise.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know how many.
I don't know how many people
know about. Yeah, electric bikes or not. So you know, they'd be like, wait, like, and so they might see it, and not even think about it, and then drive like 10, 15 seconds down the road and go like, wait, is that a dirt bike? Like, what?
That was a dirt bike, wasn't it?
What the hell? Like, what's going on?
Did it have BMX bike with fenders on it? Or that was a dirt bike. I saw a dirt bike. Yeah, for sure. I've had, even when I'd go ride tracks on mine, people would walk by or even drive it in or out with their truck, and then I'd see them back up and be like, is that one of those electric bikes? And I'd say, yep. Yeah. And they'd get out, come over, ask questions, talk, like, yeah, it's
pretty cool.
Cool, man. So it's just a cool-looking bike, yeah.
Is the power of this, just out of curiosity, a last note about this electric bike, is the power still the same?
I would compare the power of the Altimotive bike more toward a 252 stroke, which is what everyone was riding in freestyle, and that's the premier class of racing, until four strokes became the bikes to ride, you know, maybe 2004, 2005, 2006, that change started happening. And then, but yeah, they're definitely slower than a 450. And when I say slower, I don't mean like top speed slower. They're probably as fast, maybe even faster top speed, like a drag race down the road, as a 450. But a 450, the grunt and the torque they have will just get to that speed in a hurry much faster than that Altimotive bike. But I mean, if I went, when I made the switch, it was kind of like, well, it's, you know, kind of giving up a little power, but hey, I'm sponsored, I'm going to get these free bikes, and this bike's a lot of fun, it's electric, this is cool. But I just had to finally say, okay, well, you know what, it's like riding what I used to ride, a 252 stroke, all the way up through 2010. And once I kind of made that mental switch, it just kind of made some things click. I had to approach jumps just a hair faster, a little bit more twist of the throttle, but, I mean, slight differences, but that was really kind of a point where some things clicked in my head.
So, awesome.
Not a slow bike at all.
Awesome. Well, that's cool, man. Well, hey, you know, you got to keep moving forward. You know, I wanted to talk to you about something. Last time we interviewed, you were doing music. Do you still do music?
I don't. I actually, I used to have a little bit bigger house, and I had my course in my backyard. And when I had some years of injuries, and just naturally getting into my 30s, you know, my career was slowing down. So I downsized my life and sold my course and all that. Long story short, in the smaller house I'm in, I don't have room for a studio. I had a little closet studio and soundboarded up, and it was real, real nice in my old house. So the Pro Tools and the mic have been in storage for a while, and I'll feel like, especially if I'm driving to a show, you know, long ways away, you know, going state to state, I'll end up writing a rhyme it, or, you know, finding an instrumental on my iPhone that I've got in my iTunes and make a little rhyme or something, but I really don't make songs or record anymore.
Well, life, you're busy. You have, like,
kids.
Yeah, kids, marriage, you're riding, you're, you know, hey, man, maybe one day we could record a song, or, you know, music, you could do your whole life, bro. You could get back into music, you know?
Totally. Yeah, there's no expiration date on that.
I mean, I know.
I'd love to link up. I definitely need to brush. I got a little nervous when you said that. I got to brush up my skills, man. You're polished and on point.
Man, music is rad. Like, you know, people always ask me, like, oh, music, the differences of the two. I'll ask you, because you've done music and obviously moto. First of all, what are the similarities of the two to you?
I think the similarity is just the place where it comes from. I guess the inspiration or that expression, if you can use that word, I guess it comes from a similar place inside, and almost like when you're doing it, you're kind of alone. When you know, no one else can write it for you or bring that emotion up. Or, you know, a lot of times for me, it's like when I was doing my freestyle career, it took all of me to do it. I mean, I had to be mentally, physically, emotionally, like, all in. I couldn't. You know, I wasn't doing another thing. I didn't have another job at that time, and it was all I could do. So that was the best of me, my writing and preparation and all that. And, you know, sometimes slowing down to get down to your real thoughts and how you really feel about something or things you want to do in life. But, you know, when you're busy, you won't ever just kind of break into that side of your mind, you know. Being able to, like, sit down or have a long plane flight or a long drive to just think things through, that's when kind of the inspiration will come for lyrics or for just the theme of a song in general. And so there's definitely those similarities. And if the difference is, it's much safer than what I do. The injuries aren't there. And you know, it's the cool thing is that kind of like our whole community of action sports, whether it's BMX, skate, moto, snowboard, or whatever. You know, there's, I'm sure you got a buddy that loves the diehard hip hop head, punk rock, metalhead. There's like, there's someone we all know. There's
yeah.
Everyone loves, or not everyone, but we've got all different types of music lovers within our genres. And there's always someone making it. There's tons of guys doing hip hop, some like Mike Mason and Adam Jones, freestyle guys that are super into metal, Bo Bamberg. They're all amazing guitar players. So it seems as though the guys that have that side to them to be, you know, the guy that backflips a BMX bike or a dirt bike, you know, are inspired by music as well.
Without a doubt. Music, yeah, man. I mean, who knows, man? Maybe one day you'll start jamming again. I mean, you know, I know you got kids, right? You got beautiful kids. That takes a lot of your time, I mean, right there, bro.
It does. And I'm not, I mean, it's, you know, watching your little guys grow up. I think you have a son and a daughter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have, two boys. And watching my little guys grow up, there's nothing better. But, man, there's only so many minutes and hours in a day and days in a week and months. Like weeks in a month and months in a year, and it's just some things just have to kind of, at least for a time or a season, might get pushed to the side. And that's what I felt like with my music. I still write a lot. I'm a Christian, so when I read my Bible, a lot of things just come up, and I'll just write those things down. Maybe not even in a rhyming format, but just writing things down is still, you know, a part of my life. And I don't think that ability to write and rhyme and make a song and put those things together, which is, you know, a joy and a hobby of mine. I don't think it'll ever leave me, but just, you know, it's like just busy, man. Like today, basically all I'm doing is like completing Excel sheet for distributors, overseas distributors for death. And it's just,
takes time.
It's not hard. It doesn't take an intelligent person to do it, but it just takes hours,
yep.
And minutes and days to do this stuff.
Yep.
So it's like, I remember being young and just thinking like, I'll never give up all these hobbies, things of mine. That's what fuels me and drives me. And then you end up, you know, like maybe you can attest that right after you have kids, you hang on to that and you're trying and 3, 6, 9 a year in, and you finally, you know, you're operating off just a couple hours of sleep a day, and you finally are pushed to the point where you're like, you know what, I'll be a man and sacrifice that, maybe only for a time, but to benefit my family, because really what my job is now is to give these little guys a safe home to grow up in, and give my wife the home she needs to raise these boys, and for me to have some time to spend with them. So, you know, it's just, I'm sure I'll have the time in my life in the future, maybe when they're a little older and they're going to school, you know, they'll be 3 in April, so it isn't too far away, so maybe I'll have a couple hours a day to do those things, but it'll never leave me, man. It's just, I think, like, you know, once you dove into that and you make music and you learn an instrument and kind of learn your style or your voice, and it's like riding a bike, man, because you'll want to do it again someday. If you can't do it today, you'll be doing it someday down the road, you know?
Of course, and I respect you for everything you just said about a place for your family and raising your kids, and I will say this, it goes fast, man. My daughter's 12, my son's 10, and dude, it goes quicker than you think. Like, it's a trip.
Yeah.
It's a trip, bro.
I cannot believe April will be 3 years. That's a trip to me, exactly. That just doesn't seem right, but it's exactly mathematically right. It's been 3 years since they were born, and, you know, it almost, like, I'm hearing what you're saying, dude, and it just almost gives me, like, makes my heart hurt, because, man, I want them to stay young, too. There's, you know, I used to not know what that meant when I'd hear parents say that when I wasn't a parent, and, you know, I was during Christmas time, I was walking around. My boys, every night after dinner, they wanted to go see Christmas lights. We put on our hoodies and beanies, and we go walk around the neighborhood with Christmas lights. And there's a guy down the street who's just always kind of working and tinkering in his garage. And we walked by, he walked out. And he's a little bit older, and, you know, said his kids are all teenagers now, and like adult teenagers, you know, 17, 18, 19. He was like, how old are your kids? I said, 2.5, a little over 2.5. He's like, this is it, brother. Right now is the time.
Yep.
Is when they're just, they love dad, they love mom.
Yep.
Everything you're doing, they want to do. They just want to be your little fuckaroo. They want to be like you.
Yep.
And it's just how it almost, like, gives me almost these clear memories of when I was a kid, when before you knew that you cared what other people thought about what you dressed like, or the shoes you wore, or cared about what a girl thought about you. And I just, like, almost breaks my heart to know that one day these guys are going to go out to the world, be it just maybe even kindergarten, and start to realize, like, oh my gosh, that person doesn't like me. Maybe they'll want to change to be something to make that person like them, like we've all done in our life.
Right.
And, you know, kids are brutal, dude. Kids are cruel well, to each other. And it just almost breaks my heart to realize that my little boys are going to face those things. So not that they're going to make the decisions I did or anything, but, man, it's just being a parent. Hard, man. I never knew how many layers there are to it. Like you said, there's just so many layers, and you love them so much. And I wish there was a pause button. I wish they could be 2.5, 3 forever, but you got to let go and let them do their own thing. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to enjoy it, soak up every moment. And that's why, you know, I can still be out, you know, traveling, riding, learning new tricks, breaking my body in half, healing, rehab. You know, that's how it was for over a decade for me. That was just the goal, was to just ride, push the limits, get healthy, and that was just the cycle. You got hurt, you got healthy, you rehab me, but I want to be home. I want to get them out of their cribs. I want to put them in their cribs. I want to drive them to school. I want to, if that means I go from making $200,000 a year to making, you know, $50,000 a year, then I just got to roll with it, because I don't want to be an absent dad, you know?
You're a good dude, bro. You're doing the right thing, and just, you know, they'll love you the rest of your life, man. Well, I appreciate
thanks,
you talking.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, dude, you're a good dude, bro. Need more.
Well, thanks, Rick. I feel the same about you. Yeah, man. I mean, I can't believe it. I just looked at my phone. It's been what, an hour here now?
I know. We got to cruise.
Thank you so much for the time, man.
Plug your Instagram.
I want you
to plug yourself.
Yeah,
plug all your stuff all right now.
Yeah. Thanks for plugging my glove company, Rick, and everything. And everyone, if you want to keep up with me, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. At NateAdams741, and keep up with what I'm doing. I appreciate it.
What's the 741 out of curiosity?
That was my race number, man.
I figured it.
Supercross and all that. Yeah, you know, when I went to make my social media account, Nate Adams was taken, unfortunately. So I had to do something to get my own get my own profile.
You made it cooler. You made it cooler.
Well, thank you.
Cool, brother. Well, have a great day. I appreciate it. And like you know what, man? Keep doing your thing. You're a good dude. God bless. Rock on.
Same to you, Rick. Keep doing your thing. You're a good dude. God bless you. And chat soon.
Okay, brother. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye.